Welcome to the second official full-length Crystal Habit podcast. Thank you for tuning in. This show, we've got two segments for you, including a call with a special guest from one of our sister studios. And we also have a slightly longer take five with Carl, where he's going to explain away some of the more pressing questions that we've been receiving via email or Twitter or Tumblr this past month. Make sure to stick around till the end of the show, though, because we have a special announcement, something we think a lot of you Tomb Raider fans are going to be excited about. So sit back and enjoy. All right, thanks for tuning in, everyone. This time we're switching up things, and I'm having Carl on for the first segment to do our take five. So answering the most popular questions from the month, which I know Carl is always eager to do.
Oh, every single time you ask me to do these, I go gulp.
Because they are usually the most frequent ones, are also the toughest questions.
That's They're also the ones that I think we have to get out there. We have to make sure that people know that we're covering and we're not just
evading. We're not avoiding them. And this like makes my life easier because then I can just copy and paste the answers or direct people back to the podcast because, again, I get these questions quite frequently. So, starting off, a number of fans have asked about the decision to aim for a mature PEGI 18 rating. Why did Crystal come to the decision? And is there any chance for special versions that would remove blood and whatnot for younger fans?
Let me just say before you do that, you have the coolest collection of toys on your table ever.
I do. Are they distracting you?
Yeah, like as I'm talking, I keep picking things up and playing with them, like talking
He's
to each other.
He's currently playing with the Unicornosaurus.
From Kid Robot. That's fucking awesome.
From Kid Robot. All right, mature games.
Okay, so mature games. So in the very early stages in concepting this reimagining of Tomb Raider and who Lara Croft is and trying to carve this new character, it became very evident in the early stages that what we were trying to communicate in this very visceral, very real world and the experiences that Lara would go through, that every single time we put in a situation, we were toning it back down to make it fit in a T-rated world. And it kind of belittled all the things that we felt so important to delivering a new experience. So we obviously took a little time and did some soul searching, and we came to the realization very quickly that we had to move into the M-rated space. Oof, I nearly said T-rated. We had to move into the M-rated space because if we didn't, then you as a player would play the game and kind of feel like, oh, that feels very soft and very light, and I don't really feel it's believable, only because we couldn't push the believability of what she comes across. So it was a tough decision to make because obviously there's a lot of things to take into consideration. Outside of obviously the age of our players, there's also things such as the types of partners we can work with, the types of advertising and the times which we can advertise. Working with ESRB and with PEGI to be able to restrict some of the communication tools. It is a big decision, and we really, really appreciate that. You know, people are excited to see what we're going to deliver, but they also have to understand that we can't deliver a very immersive and visceral experience and deliver in a way in which we feel it needs to be if we were to stick inside of a T-rated space. So it was a bitter pill to swallow, but it was a big decision, and we believe we've made the right one.
And so no chances for these alternate or kind of diluted
no,
versions
I think,
of the game?
No, I think once you've made that decision to sit in the camp of an M-rated game, you have to go in 100%. You can't look back and belittle it by going back in and making it a T. And I think, you know, players would understand that. You can't say she says one thing and then all of a sudden you switch over to the tame version and she says another, because then it gets into the psyche of the character. You know, you start carving two different types of Lara Croft, and that wouldn't work in the overall franchise either. So it has to be all or nothing.
The uniform vision. All right.
Exactly.
Second question, which is one of the more popular ones because this is a franchise pillar, I suppose. Will there be unlockable outfits in the game or just the one seen in the trailer? Which is a great costume, by the way. I like her costume.
So before I answer that question, Ensemble. Tell me who this little guy is.
That is an angry panda. Shoot, but it's like modeled after Stitch from Lilo and Stitch. Now I'm going to have to include images in the podcast so that
That's
people
perfect.
Know what I'm talking about.
Every question you've got, I get to pick up a new item and talk about it beforehand.
We are going to
Deal?
Be here for
awesome.
Days.
Okay, so question again.
The
Will there be unlockable?
Outfits.
Oh, everybody, why does everybody keep asking me to give away all our secrets this early out? So we've got loads of time to go, people and fans. You know, we're still a year out, so, you know, I think the easiest thing to say and the one which I stick by is that, of course, Tomb Raider over the years has been known for unlockables and known for things that you could do beyond just playing the core game. And that we take that to heart. And the exact same with all the items and all the things that Lara is and who she used to be. And that, you know, watch this space. We love unlockables and we love items as much as you do. So I'm not going to give away whether that's a yes or a no or how much or how little.
It's a worth thinking about it.
Yeah, and we're still so far out that we can make that decision. It's not something that I have to make in the next week with the team. We've already got a ton of ideas on the table, and once we get the game locked and we're happy with making sure that the experience is right all the way through, then we'll get into the cool, fun little aspects.
Awesome. All right. Why did Crystal decide to partner up with Beats by Dre Spec and use a modern-looking phone in the trailer? Should we expect product partnerships to continue throughout the game?
So what I'd say about those products is that from the very early days when I started concepting out the trailer with the team, I really wanted to make sure that we positioned the trailer in modern day. And it did more than just kind of come across as product placement. I'm not big into just putting stuff in for the sake of it being in there. I don't like doing deals with people just to say, oh, we get X amount of money if you put our product in. Everything we do has to make perfect sense with the character and the world. So for me in the early stages, it was trying to find items that would help ground who she is, the time that she's in, tell you a little bit about her that you may not have gotten in the past. And, you know, it's like I always say, you pick up somebody's iPhone or their iPod and you press play on the first few songs that they've been listening to, you get to see a little bit more or hear a little bit more about that person. You start to build up a personality and, you know, understand them in a way in which you don't get from just having a conversation with them. So for us, it was like, you put something like the earphones in, you know, they stand for something. That's kind of, that's earphones of today, right? They're hugely popular. You know, and we don't pay them, they don't pay us. That was just a mutual, you know, it fit the character that we're creating, and it was something that we believe Lara would have, so therefore it was in. You know, Lara has an iPhone, and to me it was, you know, Spec's a huge company. It's one that's easily accessible around the world, so we're not creating partnerships or opportunities, and we put something in which is just the most random thing that nobody could ever get their hands on, and it wouldn't communicate well. So for me, it's about, you know, helping set the foundation of the character in the world. And then for longer-term partnerships, of course, Tomb Raider has been around 15 years plus, and it's had many, many partnerships with many different companies. And, you know, I've kind of tailored a lot of them and pulled them all back and sort of made decisions not to continue with some of them because they don't sort of stand up or live beside the brand and the franchise that we have a vision for over the next 5 to 10 years. So, you know, some partnerships will not continue, but then there's partnerships that make perfect sense. So over the course of the campaign, you will see some. I can't go into details on what they are, but let's just say that we're transfixed on trying to make sure that every single thing that we do and every single partner that we have fits within the world of the game, and it's not done just for the sake of a dollar crossing hand to hand.
I'm going to throw a curveball question in here because talking about her phone, and this is more for the fans to lay this to rest. The song playing on her phone is not a licensed song from the trailer, correct? That was just something we whipped up.
That was just something that Alex made up.
Yeah,
people were trying
really hard to figure out what that music was, and just to make it a little bit easier on everyone, that was just an original clip whipped up for the trailer.
Yeah, Alex just sat there with a couple of different synthesizer sounds and whipped up a cool thing, you know, because he's got a bloody master's in audio design, so it doesn't take him that long to be able to put something like that together. You never know. We might put that out as a special track someday. If people want to hear it, we'll get Alex to compose the entire thing. I can just imagine him sitting there going in his office going,
dance party. All right, number 4.
That was my best party boy from Jackass. I'm not going to rip my trousers off. It's okay.
All right, number 4. Will Lara talk to herself throughout the entire game? If so, how do you balance her narration with a sense of isolation?
Yeah, she's schizophrenic. She's like me. She answers herself
News
as well.
Flash.
No. So again, we're so far out from launch of the game, and unfortunately, when you try and reposition or reimagine this new vision, you have to go through such a strong character arc. You know, she's, as we keep saying, 21 years of age, straight out of college, you know, gets in this situation. Of course, just like anybody, you'd be afraid. You'd be alone. You'd probably talk to yourself for hours on end just to keep your sanity. But as we go through the game, our goal is that you see this huge character arc, somebody growing stronger every day. Every experience makes her sort of go that little bit further to becoming the Lara Croft that we all want her to be and become. So in the early stages, yes, what you've seen is her, you know, obviously moaning or talking to herself, but but that will not continue. And obviously, the decision of what she says and when she says it is worked out between, you know, from the creative director, Noah, to our narrative designer internally and through a scriptwriter, who in brackets will remain unnamed, close brackets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a very serious thing for us because obviously we don't want players an hour or two in to be like, oh, come on, you know, get over it. You know, she's going to have to grow pretty quickly because otherwise she'll just be killed. Mm-hmm. So we will see her change drastically in a very short period of time. But as I said, by the end of the game, I want people to sit back and go, that's the Lara Croft that we know. That's the girl that we want to control. And I know, I just realized, is you just jumped ahead of question. I didn't even get to talk about the next toy. So who's this glamorous little girl, Medusa, looking?
That is Medusa by Eric Scarecrow. I know both the name and the artist for that one.
This is pretty cool.
Isn't
She's
it?
Got huge boots.
She's got
boots
a snake coming out of her shoe and her hair.
Yeah, and her hair is a Medusa.
Is he trying to avoid these questions? Is that what's going on? Because the last one, is the last one scary? No, the last one is not that scary. You ready?
Okay, go for it.
Will the camera be unique from past games in the upcoming Tomb Raider? If so, how?
Yes, the camera will be unique to past Tomb Raider games because we realized that in some ways the camera, not that it was, not that it wasn't, but it always felt broken. It felt, it was a hard thing to control, let's say. I won't get into too bad because we were very, very happy with the games that we shipped. But what we did learn was that we needed to create a whole new camera and a whole new experience and a way to be able to kind of immerse the player into that experience, feeling each different tone. So what I mean by that is, an example is just here going through the tunnel. Obviously, it's claustrophobic. You can't do that with a 10-foot camera off the back of her shoulder. You need to be up close. You need to feel personal. You need to hear her in your speakers, kind of, you know, whinging or afraid, or when the water splashes around, and you have to have that intimacy. So the camera has to be really up close beside her face so you can see what she's seeing. And then when you get to things like where she's going to be in combat, of course, you have to be able to pull the camera back to allow the player to be able to see more around them, to be able to evaluate the situation she's in. And then the same when she's climbing, you know, or moving around dynamic traversal. The camera has to be close enough to be able to feel that you're in that space with her. So for us, what we class it is a dynamic camera, and we've brought on a whole team specifically just to be able to make sure that experience is unique and different. And when I say it's different, as we get through the rest of the campaign next year, you'll start to see some really bold and innovative ways of being able to show how we've tailored the camera for each individual experience. It really is phenomenal. It really, really is. We're delighted with the camera team who are on board right now.
That's probably one of the more exciting bits.
Okay, you're not getting away with it. Who's this little guy?
That I don't know. I think it's from like a company called Robotech or something.
Okay, let me tell you.
It in Japan, and it's a little pink bunny with a microphone and a mug of icy cold foamy beer.
Oh, he's my buddy.
I think he's like a karaoke fan.
Karaoke bunny with beer. I love it. And from Japan, which mm-hmm. is the best place in the world to do karaoke because everybody thinks you're a rock star.
I have yet to do karaoke in Japan.
It is
I've
funny.
Been afraid. Actually, I've yet to do karaoke anywhere because I don't sing.
I have the funniest story ever is a good friend of mine, Morten Larsen, from Funcom, the VP of marketing. The two of us got a little bit drunk. In ye old English pub in Santa Monica at E3 about 5 or 6 years ago, and probably what four or five years ago, and we went into this bar, karaoke was on, and Morten decided to say, okay, let's place a bet. If I do a song, you do a song, but we each have to pick each other's songs. So I said, okay. So we flipped the coin, and I lost, and I went first, and he had me sing Madonna Like a Virgin. And somebody recorded it and put it on YouTube within 10 minutes. And I had to ask them politely to take it down or break both their knees.
So and it's then, not up there anymore? If
no,
I
it's
to search
gone.
For it?
No, it is gone.
Damn.
Man, please don't find that.
you put the story out there. Some internet sleuth is going to find it somewhere.
Yeah, well, if he does, it'd be great because I'd love to see it a second time. And then Morten, I had him sing You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. But
Those two compliment each other.
They were absolutely
nicely.
Perfect. Only he went whole hog straight in and did a really good job of singing his, and I was somewhat embarrassed.
And that didn't end up on
to
YouTube?
To be singing. No, no, nobody recorded him. It was a person from Funcom who recorded it and put it up. So obviously they were Sneaky. Afraid to get on the bad side of Morten.
Funny. All right, well, thank you for answering our reader questions. And hang in there, everyone else. We actually are going to jet right into our second segment, which features a special guest from Eidos Montreal, and Carl will be sticking around for that.
Excellent. I'm excited. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
have a special appearance by Jonathan from IDOS Montreal, who often goes by JJB because his last name is a little difficult to pronounce. So do you want to give us a go so we can hear it?
Yeah, so my last name is Jacques Bellatet. It's a hyphenated last name like we do here in French Canada. So Jacques, my
you
mom,
French people.
Last name Bellatet is my dad's. That's what we do.
Well, I definitely understand why it's a little easier to go by JJB. And you're the art director over at IDOS Montreal, correct?
I am the art director on DSX Human Revolution, yes.
So that's why we have you here with us today, because it's a very exciting time over at that studio. So Deus Ex Human Revolution, it launches on August 23rd in North America, correct?
Yes, and it's launching the 26th in Europe, right. Yeah.
So do you guys have anything left to do? What's the mood like in the studio right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, there's really nothing left to do. I'm pretty sure the game is probably even done printing by this time. It's probably in a whole bunch of cargo ships to warehouses and then to stores. I would guess, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks away from street date. So what's the mood at the office, really? That's a good question, because I haven't been at the office for about a month and a half now. I've been on vacation. I'm on vacation right now. My guess is that it's really good, from the people I've been talking to, and we're I'm not part of it, but they are preparing a crazy big launch party that we're going to have on the 23rd at a very, very nice venue in Montreal. So pretty exciting stuff.
So have you been on vacation that entire duration of time, or have you been traveling too, promoting the game leading up to launch?
Yeah, I've also been kind of working, doing a bit of a promo event still, and some meetups and things like that. So yeah, I've still been promoting the game while on vacation. So I've had a few phone call interviews, which is kind of okay. I would be like at my place, either if it was in the morning, having coffee, talking to the journal over the phone, or at night with a beer. even when I gave from my cottage, I was there for a few days, and I needed to give an interview to a local newspaper, a very cool kind of cultural newspaper that we have here in Montreal. And I'm actually kind of sitting in front of the lake at the cottage giving the interview. It was quite awesome, really.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, that's a lot better than the interviews that most people have when they're stuck
in
the press room.
Yeah, mind you, I got to sit in my office last week, and people came to me and recorded me sitting on the couch, chilling in the corner, and I wished every interview could be like that. And I just got back off holidays, and I had the exact same thing. I had people asking me whilst I was in Ireland, could I pop by and do some interviews? So I met with a few people.
Oh, yeah, true.
But it was, even trying to take holidays in this industry is hard, because no matter where you are in the world, there's always somebody close to you who wants to talk to you.
Somebody somewhere. Yeah. You'd have to go pretty desolate to get away from everything.
I think even if you found somewhere desolate like Murmansk in Russia, I'm sure there's an editor all the way up there who'd be delighted to hear from you.
This is my opportunity.
Yeah, and especially if you had an understanding with PR and marketing before you leave on vacation, that you're open to those.
Yeah, and also,
because the thing is that we all left, pretty much all the directors, we left on vacation at the same time, about 2 months before release, which is kind of normal that 2 months before release there's still quite a bit of interviews and things like this and media things to do for the game. So we all said it's all good as long as it's not kind of too crazy, really over-exaggerating and whatnot, we're okay with it.
And that's the problem with Twitter nowadays as well, is that people get to see where we are in the world very easily.
Do you tweet a lot, or do you avoid that during these kind of downtimes?
Say that again, sorry?
Do you tweet a lot? Do you use Twitter, or do you try to avoid that during these downtimes when you're supposed to be doing personal vacation?
I don't try to avoid it. Yeah, no, I don't try to avoid it. I've actually tweeted quite a bit less. It's not because I was trying to avoid it. It was really just because I had a life, which I didn't really for the past 4 years.
Have you not followed Jonathan's tweets?
I started following him today.
Jonathan has the funniest tweets because he goes through... I know, I was going to say, you go through this cool phase where it was like, for an entire month or two, all it was just your fascination with legs and heels. So it was people stopped at traffic lights getting ready to cross the road, and it was great. I loved it. It's changed, though. Go back to that. I like that one.
ask me, that's a never-ending fascination. I guess it's I guess on Tumblr, yeah, because Carl, I guess you're referring to what I was posting on my Tumblr page and whatnot. And yeah, maybe I've my Tumblr, I have started posting other things, but my personal fascination for legs and heels, it hasn't really gone away, really.
I just started following your Tumblr, too. As an art director, you're allowed to be fascinated with those things.
Well, whilst we're on the subject, why don't you give everybody who's listening to this your Twitter handler so they know how to follow you. What's your Twitter name?
So my Twitter name is Jonachoo. So it's J-O-N-A-T-C-H-O-O. That's just a weird thing we have, me and my friend. We just add, like, choose at the end of everything, like C-O.
You've got multiple personalities now, lots of different identities. People realize who you are across all mediums? They're like this JJB guy, this Jonathan guy, and then not realize that you're the same person?
I hope they don't.
Probably they recognize it's you across all mediums.
I guess it's all right. I mean, I pretty much say the same stuff all the time.
So, Jonathan, today we're coming. Obviously, Deus Ex is just about to launch, but obviously the listeners, I'd love you to give them an idea of when you started this project so that they can understand how long this goes on. Because, you know, from our perspective, we've been at it now for, you know, give or take a year and a half. But you guys have been going at this a long, long time. You're coming to the end of a really long session of early pre-pro concept, and now you're right involved up to interview. So how long has the entire process taken so far?
We're nearing 4.5 years now, if we actually count, you know, let's say all the way up to today, you know, which obviously I'm doing this podcast with you guys on the game, and there's other stuff coming and probably a few things after the game, after the release as well. So close to 4.5 years now. We started kind of early spring 07, and really just four guys in what we call the aquarium, because, you know, fish tank, because we were renting offices at that time, because the real offices weren't ready yet. You know, we had nothing, not even computers at the for like the first week. Just kind of looking at one another, saying, what the hell have we done? We had cushiony jobs with cool projects, you know? And now we have to, like, revive one of the biggest franchises ever at a studio that only exists on a signed piece of paper. But, I mean, I was actually one of my very best buddies in town. He lives in Whistler in Vancouver, and that's, like, the most western part of Canada. And, you know, we've known each other for, like, 17, 18 years, and he's been in town now for about 2-3 weeks. I was actually talking with him earlier on today, saying, like, I still haven't really fully realized that this thing is finished. You know, I remember when we first received all the dev kits, we stashed all those boxes in Stephen Dastu's office, you know, the general manager of IDOS Montreal, because that was the only place where there was space to put those kits. And we're just looking at them saying, yeah, I guess now we have to do a game, you know?
So since it's been such a long journey, then how does it feel to see that first review come in? Because the first one came in from, what, PC Gamer, and it came in at a 94?
The first one how they reviewed the first DSX, it was a 95.
Oh, I'm sorry, 95. All right.
Congratulations, though, because that's awesome to get that.
I saw the post on Tumblr that said something like 95 cancel pre-order, and I just started laughing. But, like, that had to feel good, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They gave 95 to the first one, PC Gamer, and they gave us 94. And is that what you were saying? Were you saying the score that we had or the score that the first one had, Mary? Sorry. Megan, sorry.
The score that you got from PC Gamer for Human Revolution, the first review that we got, what was that?
Oh, yeah, that was a 94. Sorry, I misunderstood. I thought you guys were saying how what's the score that the first...
Yeah, no. So,
oh,
for
So the comparison was that your game got the 94 and the original one got the 95, right?
Yeah. So our first review is a 94, and there's also a 10/10 lying around somewhere.
That's good. 4.5 years to have some big review scores come out like that. Congratulations.
How did the team react back in the studio to that? Like, are there already issues of that magazine framed up on the wall? Like, how does the team celebrate that?
Again, that's a good question. Like, you know, because I haven't been at the office since those numbers have been out. So, you know, I've seen a few tweets from you know, some of the guys on the team, and they seem to be super excited. I mean, you know, a project like that, it's such a huge game, such a complicated, complex game, a type of game that had never been developed in Montreal, even though we're, you know, one of the great kind of video game development centers, I guess. But we kind of, our expertise is in adventure games and first-person shooters and whatnot, so it was a hard, long road to get to where we are today. I'm convinced that the team is just so stoked to see that all those efforts, you know, sweat, blood, tears, have been really worth it, you know.
So before you went on this little hiatus and well-deserved break, do you have any fun stories from on the road doing all this promotion stuff? Any favorite countries to travel to, best places for food, coolest events you've been to?
I guess I could have a lot.
Apart from us this time last year at Gamescom, walking out of a bar at 4:30 in the morning and finding that little bar down the back alley where they locked us in, and it felt like I just walked into a scene in Hostel. The guy who was the bouncer on the door who locked the door behind us, it felt like we just walked into a scene out of Hostel, and we couldn't drink our beers quick enough to get the hell out of it. It was scary.
So any other particular stories more exotic than the one that Carl just noted? I've heard some crazy stuff from the road from other developers, so I'm interested to hear if there's anything quite noteworthy.
So much stuff. But there's actually another one where Carl was there.
Naturally.
Actually, that time. And we went to this restaurant where... it was a dumpling restaurant, I think.
Oh, the one
we ordered. We're with Roxy, who is the PR girl from next London, you know, UK, and she said, "Oh, this works." And we didn't have much time. I had to go have an interview, I think, for I think it was a PlayStation magazine. Yeah, it was official PlayStation magazine, I think. And so she's like, "Okay, so we'll take this, and that," and then we kind of all, you know, agreed with her because we didn't know exactly how to.
Yeah, because the guy who was serving us didn't tell us how many dumplings came in a pack.
he looked quite worried, actually, even though he didn't tell us anything, but he looked very worried. But I didn't know why. And then, maybe 20 minutes later, they started, bringing, loads after loads after loads of, those.
It was the most amount of dumplings I've ever seen in my life. And I have a photograph of it on my phone, so we'll post it on the blog so people can see Jonathan surrounded in dumpling boxes.
I don't know. We ended up sending half of it back to the studio, the Square Enix studio there, offices. I mean, I think it's still fed quite a few people down there.
Holy cow, he's showing me the picture right now. That is a lot of dumplings, and you look very concerned.
In that picture, it's only a fraction of all of what we had.
It's like a tower.
I think Roxy had ordered just for me, you know. That was kind of crazy. I mean, there's been tons of things. It was in Paris once. I was in this hotel. I don't remember what it was called, but the logo was like this red star on a white background, and it was everywhere. So it looked like it was in some kind of communist hotel. It was really weird. It was even on the toilet paper. Like each square of toilet paper had a red star on it.
They're very brand conscious.
Surreal. Sorry?
They're very brand conscious, evidently.
Yeah, totally. To put it there, yeah, I had never seen to begin with, the brand of a hotel and a toilet paper. So the fact that, you know, that one had it and it was a red star, that was quite weird. Whatever. I don't know if you guys knew that in London, that's another thing. Park in the middle of London. So I guess it's kind of like your central park. And it's a beautiful place, and there's beers in it. And she's telling me, you know, there's beers in the middle of London. I'm like, yeah, right, there's beers in the middle of London. She's like, yeah, you know. So I kind of start believing her, and I'm expecting, you know, there's probably a bit of woods in the park. And once in a while, maybe, you know, once in your lifetime, you have a sighting of one beer. So we're going to the park, we're driving, and then suddenly she's like, hey, look that way. And it's like a huge clearing, and there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of like round boulders, you know, whatever. And I think they're brown boulders. And she's like, look at all the beers. And I'm like, what, where? Like, where all those boulders are at? Because we're still pretty far. And, all those rocks. And I'm like, oh, my God, all these rocks were actually beers. Just lying in the middle of London, just chilling,
you know, eating grass or whatever they do. And I just couldn't believe it. It was like, literally, there was probably like 800 deer, bang, just there. And they're not moving, and there's people walking around them. And I guess they're like royal deer, I guess, Carl. Would they be, I guess, Queen probably owns them or something?
Oh, yeah, it's I think all the parks in around London are all owned by the Queen. So you're not allowed to steal plants, and you're certainly not allowed to chase their deer. They don't like that.
You don't want to walk out there with a bow and arrow? And
no, they don't like you hunting their deer in London. All right, so we're getting near the end of it here. So let's go through some of the basic details. Make sure that people know what platforms, when it's coming out, because ultimately that's what we want people to do, is get out there and buy the ASX and give it a spin.
So and enjoy it. So what are the final details then about the game?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously the game's coming out, like we said, on the 23rd. It's coming out PlayStation 3, coming out for Xbox, and so it's a huge PC game. You know. Which is a port, obviously. We totally concentrated. It's only, you know, huge game, super crazy immersive world, and that's really one of the main things we concentrated on. It's just such a kind of a credible world that's just going to suck you in and just to do and last anywhere 40 hours. You can pretty much do whatever the hell you want. So just jump in it. This is what we created for the players, and I'm sure they're gonna love it. Really, and there's three different versions. Sorry, there's the, you know, the regular version of the game, 360, PlayStation 3, whatever, and then there's the augmented edition, which comes with art books, a DVD, and a soundtrack, if I'm not mistaken. And then in Europe, you can get the collector's edition, which is beautiful, which comes with all the stuff from the augmented edition and the Adam Jensen figurine.
That's the one I'm getting. I can't wait to see that, because PlayArt Sky are famous for their articulated models, and I'm so looking forward to it. I've seen a couple of different versions of it as it's gone through the process, and this is definitely one I want to sit in my desk beside me.
Yes, and you did sort of forget one bullet point, that the game is absolutely gorgeous, which has a lot to do with you and your art direction, I suppose. So congratulations on that end.
Thank you very much. I had probably the most talented artist universe on that game, so I guess I had a few crazy ideas.
Well, they paid off, so.
Totally. Thank you. Yeah. The goal was to make you know, a different kind of visual signature, making sure that it kind of stands out and that it really has its own taste. Like I like to say that it kind of draws a line in the sand. You know, it's a statement. Could maybe be a little harder to digest, maybe, because it's just not kind of rehashed or whatever. But I'm quite confident that everybody will like it. Yes.
Excellent.
I agree. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Hope you all enjoyed the podcast, and thank you for tuning in. Next month, we're actually going to give you another reason to check out the show. Starting with our September episode and leading up to launch, we're going to be giving away exclusive branded merchandise every month, including a Xbox 360 decked out in Tomb Raider garb. So it'll be totally exclusive to us. We'll have some more information in the next podcast, so you'll have to listen to win. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.